Yes, Alex, thanks very much for coming on, mate.
Pleasure.
Just thought it would be good to get the two hard men of Scottish football and sit down for a chat.
Aye, very good. He says there's only one hard man. I know you've got Stone Island gear on. You look like a Millwall supporter there.
I was wondering if you fancied going leathering a young team in a scheme after this.
No, listen, you've got to be all right. I told you, if you want to start an interview like this, I'm doing a runner. You don't get to the level I was playing at, we're just kicking people, son.
I know, mate. You're a top player. How long was it before you were picked up? Was it Rangers to start with?
Well, I started at Celtic Boys Club.
Did you,
So, you don't go to Rangers?
No, no, reason.
No,
I didn't.
I started at a boys club.
Uh-huh.
And then I went over to Rangers. We dropped Wallace.
Character.
Which was a baptism of fire. It was brilliant. Because you'll get into a dressing room like, you know, Davy Cooper and guys like that, and obviously Ian Durant and Derek Ferguson were the two young guys there that I kind of looked up to because they were a couple of years older than us, and they were making a big impact at that time.
How were the older boys when you first went in? Tough?
Seriously?
Uh-huh.
The first week, and on a Monday you used to give them their kit in the days. It wasn't like your day when you maybe two or three kits in a day, you were doing a couple of sessions. And on Monday you would go in there and you would give them their kit, we'd all laid out with the ladies. And you would collect it on a Friday. You'd a wheelbarrow and you'd go lying. Now think about that. The same kit on for a week. It was humming. And I went to walk into the dressing room, because I was the guy who was going into the home dressing room. Big Ted McMahon came in and I went down to pick up the kit and I just smashed me right in the fucking ribs. And I was like kind of winded. And I was like, oh, and everybody's laughing. Like, you know, it was a bit embarrassing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you knock before you come in here. And you had to, and that was it. You had to earn your crust or respectful to get into that first team dressing room. And it was a baptism of fire, man, because I'm thinking to myself, this is the real world here, you know. And by the way, I'd only been about 9 stone. Big McMahon would have been about, I don't know, 13 or 14 stone at the time. The big guy scudded me.
Do you think that's missing for the game?
Oh, well, listen, I think you'd actually get sacked for doing that now. And the worst about it is, because I was cleaning his boots every day, I was a wee bit cheeky, you know. He used to traipse me walking along to the lunch and lock me in a cupboard for 50 minutes until he got his lunch and then let me back out. No, I'm serious. But and this was it, you know. You had to earn these guys respect and things. And but it was a great learning curve because I know the apprentices don't do a great deal at the clubs now, but you had to kind of earn their, you know, respect of how you conducted yourself about the place. And I think they've got away for that at Rangers, you know, compared to the days. You had to have a shirt and tie and suit to training, to go to training.
Mm-hmm.
And no, so they had a lot of good traditions.
So what happened at Rangers? Why did they let you go, Jake?
Well, I think it was partly to do with my lifestyle. You know, I was ran down and about Glasgow, and when Walter Smith let us go, it was soon as it was a gaffer, but when Walter Smith let us go, he said to me, he said, no matter what you do, Alex, if you're a plumber, electrician, footballer, you have to be totally focused and put a shift in. Because initially he said to me, I think you've done very well football-wise.
Mm-hmm.
He says, but your lifestyle now is kind of hampering you. So I get punted.
How was did you hear any dealings with Souness, or was it all Walter Smith?
No, it was just in the training side of things. Occasionally we'd bring a couple of young guys over, so I didn't really have a great deal with Graham at that time, and I get punted. But at that time, from getting punted, the disappointment, you see it all the time, kids, you know, they get released and it's the actual kind of deed is too much and they just walk away for the game. I was that guy. I'd walked away. I said, I've had enough. I was devastated. I said, I'm just going to go and play and enjoy football at a lower level. And there was a guy called Joe Woods who was at Bishop Briggs Amateurs. He phoned me and says, I want you to come and play amateurs. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I was just playing for Rangers, mate. I'm not coming to play amateurs. Mm-hmm. But he got me back in love with the game. And within 3 months, I was snapped up with Falkirk.
And how was Falkirk?
Well, that was the real apprenticeship. Yeah, it was the real apprenticeship. It was brilliant. And you get game time there. I made my debut when I was 17 against Dean McCall. I'd like to say, I get subbed after an hour, but that was a wee derby, Falkirk, Dunfermline. And I loved it. For 3 years I was there. And there's some great characters. And they looked after us. And like I was saying with the Denison boys against the Royson boys, that baptism, and I don't think young players at this age now get that chance to sample playing against guys that have played 300, 400, 500 games.
Mm-hmm.
And they would smash you just at a drop of a hat. So you learn how to cope in that environment. So it was a brilliant stepping stone to go down to England to play because I'd been smashed all over well, I think they were in the Premiership once at that time, and then the other 2 years they were in the Championship. But it was a great learning curve.
See how you're saying about getting released for Rangers, did that make you saying about your lifestyle and that as well, did that make you think I need to change you?
Aye, for about a week. No. No, listen, anybody in their right mind were going, right, okay. I would like to say that I went to Falkirk, knuckled down and all that, but it was a bit, you know.
What was that, just your pals wanting you to come out with them?
The thing is, I think in the days as well, it was encouraged as well, you know, the Falkirk boys would always go for a drink after the game, mm-hmm. and after training and things, just sat at Graham Street at Falkirk, you know, you go in for a pint, maybe at 1 o'clock, and you'd be lucky to catch the 11 o'clock rattler him, kind of waltzing down, so... It was very much encouraged, but I didn't need much encouraging at that time. I actually enjoyed going out and having a laugh with boys, but I didn't take Walter Smith's advice at all. No. At that point anyway. And I went down to England.
Do you think that's what made you the player you were, though, that you were a bit wild and a bit
off the cuff? Later on in my career, I went and sought help, and I don't subscribe to that one, because it's interesting what you say, that a lot of people went, aye, take his aggression away from him and all that edge, he won't be the same player. It's a load of nonsense, mm-hmm. because a lot of that behaviour was all negative behaviour, and you know, getting sent off time after time as well, fighting with everybody, that kind of stuff only puts other people off, mm-hmm. and I came to fruition as well, because when I joined Millwall, I think Everton were going to put a 900 grand bid in within the first year, and then they obviously found out what it was like down the Old Kent Road, and they went, oh, it's a bit of a bomb scare.
Uh-huh. You mentioned Millwall there. How long was it before you were playing in the first team that club started to get interested in you?
Millwall?
Falkirk, sorry.
Or Falkirk, I honestly don't know. I know I had about 3 good years there. Mm-hmm. I think my first real season, I think I scored something like maybe 13 goals and maybe 9 the next year from midfield, so it was great. But then it's interesting, because I got a phone call to say that Millwall were interested. They'd just been relegated at the top flight at that time. They had some right good players, Cascarino, Sheringham, Terry Hullock, guys like that, and I'm thinking, say, Millwall, oh, London, that sounds a bit alright, doesn't it? You know? And I always wanted to get away from Glasgow, because deep down at some level I knew that I was kind of causing my own problems. I thought, if I can just get out of Glasgow, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And then I went to London and went in the second gear. Went mental.
Bad move. Teddy Sheringham, you mentioned there. Pally with him, I think you brought him up to an Old Firm game, didn't you?
I did. Teddy was probably, people always question, who was your best player you played with? Teddy Sheringham was phenomenal. And I mean phenomenal. The season that I played with him, he scored 38 goals. You know, it's phenomenal. Wow. But it was also the assists, because he was so clever and so sharp of mind. And I brought him up to the League Cup final against your lot, Celtic. And it was a lost weekend. I took him a pub in Denison. We'd give him my bags to my brother. And I gave him, I says, listen, it was European City of Culture at that time as well. It was 1990, 91. The clubs were open to 5 and 6 in the morning. I'd been shouting and bawling down at the training, going, oh, nightclubs, top class. This is a place. I took him up to Savoy. And within 10 minutes he went, I've never seen so many ugly looking women in one place.
Slashed.
So anyway, we ended up with that, went to the cup final, and we were fortunate enough, we went back to the celebrations and Victoria's, and we left there at 4:30 in the morning, and the two of us went back to my parents' house in Denison, and we fell asleep, so we missed our flights, and we got back. Well, Teddy, in the days you couldn't book it online. And Teddy went up and says, we're needing 2 tickets for the next flight. And he went, we've only got one. And he jumped on that, right? He left me stranded. Please don't leave me. And so I got the next flight, and I got to train at 1 o'clock. And as I was walking up to the pavilion, I just seen all the players. I'm thinking, well, they all look quite fresh. I was expecting them all to be sweating and all that. Bruce Rieger said to him, if he turns up at 8 o'clock at night, none of yous are moving. He's let yous all down, right? And I'm thinking myself, oof. So when I walked in, big Mick McCarthy jumped up and grabbed me with a thought, and he went, I was at the fucking game yesterday. And I was a wee bit worse for wear for the night before. And I went, I know, Mick, but you's get fucked. But the thing is, you've not nearly seen that rage in his eyes. He threw me into the dressing room. I think I need to stay clear of him. But all the boys were all out for me that day because they were all there until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
So the manager waited for you to get Bruce back Real? Before he started training.
I got there.
It's a good way to deal with
him, isn't it? Wasn't that good, by the way? For about 2 weeks solid, man, I wouldn't even hear anybody in training.
How was Big McCarthy? Was he?
Well, he's a proper man's man. I can't speak highly enough about Mick. Mm-hmm. He was a player at the time, and then he took over for Bruce Rioch. And I found it difficult because he was a good pal of mine, Big Mick. And then all of a sudden he's the boss, and then all of a sudden you're trying to deal with orders after a guy who you're going for a pint with. So I found it difficult at the early part, and then the penny kind of dropped after he dropped me. He said to me one day, I want you to play right midfield, Alex. I says, Mick, I'm not playing right midfield. I'm a midfielder, central playmaker. Mm-hmm. I'm not going out there to get lost. He says, no way today. He says, you're on the bench. About 5 weeks I sat Mars. Mm-hmm. And then he says to me, you want to go and play on the right? I says, I'll play fucking goals for you. But it was a great learning curve, mm-hmm. because it was like, at that point, it was a case of trying to, being selfish. I was selfish and that. So it's just a case of play wherever you're asked to play and get your best shot.
And another reason you didn't want to play on the wing is because you had to take thrones.
Well, listen, when I first went to the old den, we had a fence. Mm-hmm. And it was probably only about 2 feet for the shy line, and you were taking your thrones. The Millwall fans were poking you in the ribs and telling you to liven up, saying, fucking liven up, you little shit. It was the last time I took a throne.
Brilliant. Obviously, they get a bad name, the fans, but brilliant with you.
I have to say, listen, even when I go back down now, I went back down last year for it was like a little tour of the ground, and the guy was saying this was the best numbers that he'd actually had. From people wanting to take up the question and answer and talking about some of the games over, because I was there for 6 years, which was quite a long time, really, you know. And it was, I found it frustrating because there was players leaving every year for $1 million, $2 million. And I thought I was, because of, as I've mentioned earlier on, some of my off-field antics had clearly hampered us.
And you get a move to Sunderland.
Aye.
As I've done my research, you were a goal scorer midfielder at Millwall, that's how you got your...
I just told you. See, you've told me about tough tackling and all that. When you go over 100 goals, you come into the classy kind of midfielder.
Uh-huh. But were you always desperate, as you say, was the Premier League always the aim for you, to get up to the Premier League?
It was. I have to say, it was great to get up to the North East and getting back home, because I was always travelling back to Rangers games, the old firm games on a Sunday, and then trying to get back to London on Monday morning was a nightmare. So I thought, Sunderland's about 2.5 hour drive across, so I thought, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. Plus the Premiership. And the first year was a total wipeout. It was a waste of time, because I just carried on what I was doing in London down in up in the North East, and I was out causing a wee bit of carnage, and I thought I was leaving after a year. I went and got a medical at Crystal Palace and it fell through, and thankfully it did do, because the Sunderland fans pretty much got the best of me within the space of about 8 or 9 months of that first season at Sunderland. I went and kind of started getting tapped at the drink. I just stopped drinking and things, and then my career from that point really just went, if you were talking about chart, it just went like that. Mm-hmm. Which was great, because it was a brilliant time. We'd left Roker Park, which was falling to bits, 18,000 fans of our first season. And I'm thinking to myself, we're going to a 45,000 seater stadium. Where are they going to get the people to fill this? And then within the championship, we had about 33,000 watching us on a regular basis. And then I think that was the year where we get beaten by Charlton, the 4-4. The 4-4 at Wembley, mm-hmm. and we lost in penalties with Michael Graham, missed it. And then the following year, we won the league by 105 points. It was a record in the Championship. So, and when you think about the players that were at the club at the time, Kevin Phillips was as good a finisher I'd seen. Mm-hmm. He ended up getting 30 Premier League goals. Now, they're all talking about Harry Kane and Aguero and all that. They're now, the wee man was doing that in an average team. Mm-hmm. And some great guys like Stevie Bold and Stefan Schwarz, Sorensen, Mickey Great. So just a really good nucleus of good quality players.
But you were a top man there, centre mid. Schwarz played with Arsenal, you know, bump left wing wee man.
Well, he did. He ended up going out to the like a narrow three, and then with Summerby with the delivery. So, but it was great because we had a couple of really good years. But it was when we were in the Championship, we were cruising it. And I think we were on about 600 or 700 quid a week. when we get a win bonus.
Win bonus, right, yeah.
So Kevin Ball was Mr. Sunderland, he was Mr. Sunderland, right? All the negotiations were done through Bolly, and I don't know if you know Kevin, but
he gets the job when a manager leaves, doesn't he?
Well, he's about 6 feet, but he's really a man's man.
Nothing like me, you were
going to
say that.
Aye, aye. So, so anyway, we're trying to negotiate. So Bolly was supposed to go and see Bob Murray, the chairman. I said, where's Quinny? Big now, Quinn. He's waiting to negotiate with the chairman. Bolly's standing about the dressing room. I should be, I'm the fucking club captain. And I'm going to myself, oof, this could get a bit messy. If Big Quinny doesn't come in and at least get double that, you know, maybe 1,200, 1,300 a win. I'm thinking, if he doesn't come in here, but this is going to get messy. So Big Quinny bowls in about half hour later. And Big him walks in and he went, boys, it's not good. It's not good. I'm thinking, I can see Bolly's eyes on him. What do you mean it's no fucking good? I should have been up there, I'm the club captain. And I went, oh, calm down, Molly, calm down. So he ended up, he says, right, sit down, I'll tell you the deal. And he's went, listen, I've got this £5,000 a win. So we all going, hi, right, very good, what is it? He's went, no, £5,000 a win. And I'm thinking to myself, he's got to be fucking kidding here, isn't he? Right, it was merely my weekly wage. So, a long story short, the chairman and Quinny had said, for every time they win, £2,500 is getting choked and put to the back burner, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we get relegated, we lose it all. We had 36 points at Christmas. I would have kicked my fucking granny all the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things what they did, which was absolutely brilliant, was every time we got a win, we had to put £200 in an envelope, each player, which was £4,000 between five guys. Masseur, the kit man, physios, da-da-da-da. So it meant that everybody throughout the whole club had a common goal. The masseur was rubbing the fucking hairs right off your legs to try and get you fit. So it meant everybody was
in it together.
And you've never seen a group of guys as united as that. And seriously, you introduced us like, oh, the hard man. And see, at that point, because I kind of got my life in a very good keel, like Christmas, as I'm saying to you, that time around about Christmas time, we were third in the Premiership, mm-hmm. 2 years in a bounce. Mm-hmm. So we had a really good momentum at the club, and I absolutely loved it. It was probably the fondest time in terms of enjoyed it, and because I was new at causing carnage and I was settled in my life. And it was just a brilliant, and at that point you're looking at 48, 49,000 every fortnight. You know, the stadium, and even when you speak to Sunderland fans, that was like a golden time for them.
It must upset you when you see the state they're in now.
It breaks my heart because... you know, I still go down and touch base with some friends and the club. I obviously know the chief executive, Martin Bain, from my time at Rangers, and they're really, really struggling.
Mm-hmm. But just back on the Sunderland thing, the manager was obviously Peter Reid.
Oh, brilliant.
He was a madman, was he?
Oh, Reid, he was brilliant. He was great. See, when you're talking about, I got in a fight with a guy one day, and I'm not going into the details, I don't know how long I've got. I got in a fight with a guy in the pitch, and I threatened to have a go with him at half-time. I said, I'll see you in the tunnel. You're all mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking myself, as I'm saying, I'm thinking, this guy's 6 feet two and he's going to knock seven bells at me, right? So anyway, I just juked off. My bottle crashed and I just jumped down the tunnel. And so I thought, I'll get in the dressing room and I'll just look. As soon as he comes in, just run up and leather him once and then hope for the best, because the guy was physically stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And the door burst open, it was Peter Reid, Barry. Apparently he had him pinned up outside in the tunnel. He'd ripped all his shirt, reading on that. What have you done now? I says, I've not even gaffer. I never touched him. Well, on the back of that, I got a 3-match ban and a £2,500 fine.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes you never learn.
Uh-huh. So what was he, a good man manager at here?
He was fear. Everybody was scared of him.
Scared him, wasn't
it? I mean, really, really fearful. Not many players. I think I was one of the only guys that get a second chance with him.
Uh-huh.
You know, normally when you were out his plans, he just went reserves out the door. He done it with a lot of guys in that team that I'm saying were very successful,
mm-hmm.
and he just punted them. And so I got a second chance, and it's like, I think it's important when you look back what kind of relationship you've got with the fans. For me, it is anyway. It's just like how you're regarded. And I think if you think about Falkirk as a kid, they just seen a wee boy. The Millwall fans, I think, when, as I said to you, the response every time I go down there, I'm really kind of regarded as one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to Sunderland, it was a golden period. So I mean, that means the world to me with these people, because they're the guys that are really kind of judging you on a weekly basis.
So why leave them? Why? How did it come that you're leaving Sunderland?
Well, it's interesting because Adrian Heath, I was there for 5 years, just over 5 years, And Adrian Heath, who was assistant manager at the time, the last game of the season at Everton, I had an injury. And he said to my mate, who, because Peter Reid used to take us to Marbella for 3 or 4 days at the end of the season as a thank you, I said to one of my pals, if he hadn't got injured, he'd been probably a player of the year this year. And then when the time I got back fit was around about September, so I was out more or less the whole summer with an injury. And then Peter Reid says, well, we've accepted a bid for Wolves, and I was going, so I was a wee bit kind of perplexed because I thought, one of your best players last year, so why am I getting punted? And the reason, because it meant going back down to the Championship, it's like it's physically demanding, it's all big guys. And then plus, I was, my contract was, and this was a great thing about it was all kind of, you had to play 19 games to get a wee bonus, you had to, it was all incentivised.
Performance based.
And so it worked out great for me because I ended up playing 30 odd games every year because, and I'll never forget, me and Big Quinny, because Quinny's cruciate was knackered, the two of us did a similar thing after 19 games. And in any days it wasn't a structured warm up, we used to do a couple of wee runs across the pitch, a couple of sides, and the two of us are saying, we're in the money, because we're getting both getting a wedge. So, but no, then I went down to the Midlands, and as I'm driving into Wolverhampton, I'm thinking, what am I doing? I don't want to come here. And that's been honest, because it meant my way back down south, and I'm thinking, oh, please, man, I don't want to go here. Mm-hmm. And then I went down and negotiated a wage within the space of a couple of hours, and then that was me. I'd signed a 3-year contract.
You obviously said about how well you done at Sunderland in the Premier League. Do you find you could play easy against those guys? Find yourself...
In the Premier League? Uh-huh.
Is it as good as everyone makes it at that time? Can
I just tell you something? This is just my perception. At that time... Because as I said to you, I wasn't causing havoc. Everything was focused totally on football. I didn't have any baggage, and waiting up a bit worse for wear in the morning. Every time I was going in toe-to-toe, and I think one of the biggest things, as you know, as a football player, is how you're feeling mentally. Every time I went into a game, in the couple of years with Sunderland, I knew that I could always go toe-to-toe with whoever it was. And we beat them all. We beat Chelsea, we beat Arsenal. I think we only beat Man United once. So what I'm saying is I felt as if I had no fear about going toe-to-toe with these guys.
This is my level, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, there was only six clubs finished above us that year, and it was all the kind of top draw. But we still beat these teams as well, but because of their consistency throughout the season, they obviously get there, and we just missed out in Europe both seasons. So what I'm saying is I was mentally feeling great. Physically, I was top of my game, so... I felt as if I could take on anybody. So to go back down to the Championship, I was like, But I was getting a 3-year contract, gave me a bit of security. And then plus, when they accepted the bid, I thought it's time to go to Dodge.
On a Wolves, you played in the playoff final in 2003. Nervous game going in it?
Well, I've got to be honest with you, we were about 7 or 8 points clear with 7 games my first season. And we blew it. And then the next year, I only played about 30 odd games. So I scored the winner that got us to the playoff final in Cardiff, and I never played in the final. And at that time, I thought my days are numbered at Wolves because, I'd won the player of the year the first year I got there. Second year, it was Colin Cameron and Ince. I'd started with Paul Ince because Paul Ince had joined us at that time. I thought it's time for me to move on because I hadn't played a great deal in the second part of the season. Mm-hmm. But we obviously won the playoffs, which was great. But you know what it's like, you're no kind of featuring your thing. If he's not playing me in the Championship, there's no way I'm hanging about to play there, because at that stage I'd have been about 33 at the time. I thought I might have to go out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. But the last year at Wolves, we managed to get promotion for the first time in 20 years. You know, and I'm saying it was a poor season, but I must have had 7 goals through the middle of the park. So I'm thinking about, so the last season at Wolves in the Premiership, I wound up with 8 goals.
Wow.
So, you know, and that
33,
8 goals? 33, 34, aye. So I was having a purple patch, and then, this is the irony of it all. We were playing Blackburn round about the 2nd of January, and I'd scored 2-2. It was Cole and York had scored for Blackburn, and Souness as a manager. And as I come out the dressing room, and if you know Molyneux Tunnel, it's no big in it, no. Mm-hmm. So as I come out there, Souness is just walking past, he went, you're out of contract, didn't you? And I says, aye, how? He says, I'm putting a bid in for you. And I thought, this is a wind-up, because all the press were just through the doors leading into the tunnel. And within a couple of days, there was a bid coming in to go to join Graham Souness, who had punted me all the years ago as a kid. I'm thinking,
did he remember that now?
Oh, believe me, sure he did. Every time I ever come across Souness, he's like, I can't believe you bumped me for Rangers. I could have done you a turn. But so from that January, the 2nd of January up to the 25th or 26th, I'd said to the hierarchy, listen, all once another year. And they were all hauling, going to see Dave Jones, and he was passing me on to the chief executive, Jez Moxley, back and forth for about 3 weeks. And I'm saying to myself, this is a nightmare. I said, I'm getting the piss took out of me here. And then I've done an interview with Tony Gubber for the BBC, similar to this, and he says, what's your passion? I said, oh, I love golf and going to watch Rangers. And he says, I'm meeting Alec McLeish tomorrow. And I said, will you tell Big Red I'm available for nothing in the summer?
That's
how the thing came about.
Wow. Just quick last on Wolves, you mentioned Paul Unser, who you ended up being his assistant manager. That's and stuff right. How good a player was he?
Oh, he was phenomenal. A born leader, technically very good, really strong. And but we hated each other prior to actually him joining Wolves. We didn't have,
we were playing against each other, like
just kicking seven bells at each other. And that's what I've actually come to realise, is the ones that you have all the gripes with and the ones that you dislike, you're probably similar-minded. Yeah. You might put your foot in and have a go. And I was sitting a year after he joined Wolves, and we became good pals playing golf every other day. And I was sitting in his house. He says to me, he says, I've got a nice wee room and kitchen in Portugal. Would you like to come off for a week and have a game of golf? I said, oh, I'd love that. And I've got a wee... I turned up 2 days late because I didn't want to be with him for a week. And I pitched up, and he wouldn't have let me come into his driveway with a Volkswagen Golf. He said, I don't want to devalue the house. It was a mansion overlooking the golf course. Honestly, I mean,
brilliant, was it?
I think Michael Owens get the plot next door. It's Fowler across the road, right? He wouldn't let me park the car in his house, right? And after the first night, he's had a few wines now. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning. He looked at me and he says, I want to tell you something. I said, aye, what's that, Paul? He says, I've got another year left at Middlesbrough. He says, Alec, I was on a force in Middlesbrough. I say, I got the phone call to come to Wolves. It was two hats and a blown sun. I'm thinking myself, but it was close. He was commuting to Middlesbrough every day, 6 hours. Three wow. there to training, three back. He says, so get the opportunity to come to Wolves. And you know what it's like when you go to a club, you always think, who do I know? He says, I know Dean Sturridge. Nathan Blake. He went, Alec Razor. And then we're here, 1 year down the line playing golf. But do you know the funny thing about it is? I was driving to the training, we were getting training at RAS Cosworth. With the army boys. Uh-huh. Let's come on, the governor's going to be unveiled as a new midfield general for Wolves. And I've went, oh no, no, that arsehole.
Yeah. Brilliant. 34 signed for Rangers. Did you ever think it would happen?
Oh no, no, yeah. Not at all. No. It was unbelievable how we managed to get there. It was a remarkable way it came, because of Tony Gubber. That's how it started. David Murray was like, oh, we're not signing guys at his age anymore, because I think they'd had a couple of nightmares with some players prior to that. And then David was watching, I think it was Al Jazeera or something like that on cable, and we were playing against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and it was 2-2 at half time, and we were playing against Makaleli and guys, you know, mm-hmm. me and Insane, and we were doing really well. And David went, he could do us a turn next year, so he sanctioned the deal.
Was that one of your proudest moments, signing for Rangers?
Oh, listen, I thought that had passed me by. That's what I'm saying to you. I said to Tony Gubber a couple of months earlier, I says, listen, as soon as I retire, I'm going to go and play golf and go and watch the Rangers in Europe. Mm. And that was, so to go and play, it was an unbelievable opportunity.
Uh-huh. And how did you find it? Love it straight away?
Oh, listen, people were trying to build it up to the Neil Lennon and Alec Ray, the second game of the season, man, and the ball came on my head again. I was telling you the story about the fella earlier on. I said, oh, okay, I'm getting in here. And the twos have just tackled each other, and my foot did that. And I went, oh, in the second minute, right? And I was in trouble. And I remember looking over at the doctor, I'm going, in the old days, see, the thing that kills me now is, see when players are doing it, they're going, oh, and then the next minute they're bouncing about, I hate that. Mm-hmm. But I was against the Royston boys, and growing up as an apprentice, you just didn't want to show any weakness. So I fumbled over to the touchline. I said, you need to give me something for this pain, doc. I'm in agony here. And he's went, lad, there's 2 paracetamol, got on me, right? Tap Mars. And I went out, and I think it was an Alan Thompson 85-minute winner, a pile driver. Mm. But I tore my calf, I had a 2-inch tear. I played the whole 90 minutes with a 2-inch tear.
Did you know lose your teeth as well?
No, that was another one, but that's... Do you know the funny thing about it is? Guys go like, who's the hardest guy I've ever played against? I've told you, Vinnie Jones, Terry Hurlock, Steve McMahon, right?
fucking Aidan McGeady knocks a table. He turned his back and I caught his sugar in a shite bag.
So anyway, but Parkhead wasn't a particularly good thing.
Did you enjoy the game still?
I loved them, absolutely loved them, and particularly in the first season because I didn't really feature a great deal in the second season. But it was amazing because when we got to the you know, the playoffs, Celtic were two ahead of us. And we were thinking, right, okay. But the key point for that whole season was, see, when I come back after about 10 weeks from my calf, I hadn't even played a reserve game. Try to keep fit with the physios. We'd done a double header against Celtic. And Celtic were 75 minutes into the game. They were 1-0 up. And I remember thinking to myself, if we don't beat them tonight, because we'd done really well, dominated the ball, if we don't beat them psychologically, so we hadn't beaten them a year before, we'd lost the opening game of the season to them, we would have lost it. And what happened was we won 2-1, and then we beat them about 6 or 7 days later at Ibrox as well. So we beat them a double header, which gave us a belief to then kick on. And then we're going to the split, and at 2 o'clock Andy Watson comes in, and he usually goes and looks about the dressing room to see who's going to be the sub, and he went Alec. And I'm thinking, oh no, you just know that you're on the bench. You know you've been benched. So Big Red, Big Alec nearly cost us a league that year. I think we lost 2-1 that day, and then it was 5 points, yeah, gap. I think the only person probably in the whole of Scotland that thought we could actually do it was Marvin Andrews. He kept shouting, keep believing and all that, didn't he? Him and Pastor Joe were selling t-shirts, keep believing. He made a fortune up in 5-2. So, but then we obviously, in the next couple of games, the next couple of games was, we just managed to get back in. And the way it actually panned out, you know, in the last couple of minutes, when Barry's jumping on my shoulder at Easter Road going, we've fucking won this. Yeah. And I had visions, because it was still about 10 minutes, 8 minutes to go or something like 5 minutes to go. And I had visions, because Hibs had dropped off us. They wanted to keep the score down to get to Europe. Mm-hmm. So Marvin's just passing it to Kyriakos and back and forth and back and forth. I'm thinking, this big Marvin's going to miss control one in a minute. What's his elite here? So, but the whole thing, but the interesting thing about it is, how long have we got? About a time here?
I have plenty of time.
This is it. So see, leading up to that, about a week before that Easter Road game, mm-hmm. my missus says to us, I'm going on holiday. I says, because if I see this weekend, if you lose, it'll be a nightmare. So I said, that's a great idea. Right on you go. Jog on, right? So the Thursday leading up to it, she says to us, I said, by the way, where are you going? She went, New York. And I'm thinking, what the fucking liberty? I thought she was going out to Spain, but she's taking my pants down to double flying first class to New York, right? So I thought, what a nightmare. So anyway, I've been with the same lassie since school, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been with the same lassie for a long, long time, and with ups and downs and the whole shooting match. So obviously we've won the game, and I've went in the dressing room now. Like you said, we're a couple of hard men, mm-hmm. right? So you see all these guys all jumping about like madmen and all that, right? I've burst out green.
Is it?
I just, I bumbled. I'm thinking, I can't let these characters see me greeting, because I was just pure emotion. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to get out of this dressing room. So I grabbed my phone, goes out of the dressing room. And if this is a war, I'm just leaning on my hunkers, trying to get a hold of my wife in New York. So I'm like, so eventually after about 4 times, I managed to get a hold of her. I'm going, Linda, we've won the league. And she's, I can't hear you. Apparently she was in a store called Bloomingdale's, and I've got the music on, right? So she says, just give me a minute and I'm going to go out to the stairwell. So she goes out to the stairwell and I'm going like, Linda, we've won the league, right? So the next minute she starts greeting, she goes, oh no, Ali, I should have been there, it's your biggest achievement in your career, right? Next minute I hear her going, what's that, Mick? And I'm thinking, Mick? Who's in New York, mate? And I'm like, wait a minute, she's won it, eh? Right? There is a true story. And it turns out that she's met Mick McCarthy in the 5th floor of Bloomingdale's.
No way.
With his wife Fiona. And she's saying, Alex just won the league with Rangers, mate.
Big Mick fuming.
Big Mick went, don't tell me that, I'll be fucking green. And he says, tell him I wish him all the best. Brilliant. He says, I know what the club means to him. Uh-huh. And that was the day. But straight after that, we went back to Ibrox and done the lap of honour. And again, I was gone emotionally. And to put it into words, it was just one of the best feelings ever, because I'd never sampled that as even as a supporter going back to the club, because I'd been doing in England and playing football my whole career, so I'd never actually witnessed the players getting a lap of honour. There was about 45,000 in the stadium that night, and so you know, the whole thing was just remarkable. Everybody thought that they were going to, you know, going up to the Rangers Celtic game was going to be the defining moment. So we had a guy, George, who was a psychologist, George Deans. With 10 games to go, he came in to work specifically with everybody, so it would be a collective as a team, and then it would be individual working on it as well. And he was a big help, and he got a belief, trying to just focus on each individual game leading up to the split. And but I have to say, directly after the split, I think everybody, but see, you know, it's like when you play with Old Firm, you walk about the streets, you get a bit of grief. Having played in the playoffs, I got to the playoffs 5 times in England with Millwall and Sunderland and Wolves. And the amount of times you get false information, somebody scored and then you get off the pitch, it's a total anticlimax. It's not really, it's just some guy drunk. You know? So I heard this roar, and then Barry jumped in my shoulder and says, "We've effing won this." And then within 2 minutes again, the stand went up, and I'm thinking, my God, this is just the most dramatic end to a season imaginable.
Did you expect Celtic to win at
Motherwell? Oh, well, 100%. And the interesting thing about it, I see if you go back to a year or two before it, when it went to the wire as well, I think Rangers were playing Dunfermline and Kilmarnock. Mm-hmm. I was walking about my hotel room, because I used to share a room with Mo Kamara, and I've got my underpants on, and I'm phoning my dad, "What's the score?" And I went, "Oh, that's Celtic, this their title so far." And then 15 minutes later, I'm phoning him, "Oh, Rangers are in the lead now," and it was just gone like this. Mm-hmm. And this French guy sitting there going, "Is this guy all about money? He's walking about in his underpants," and I'm going, "Oh, and I'm going mad, right?" And eventually I told my dad to put the phone at the radio for the last 15 minutes, because it's going back and forth to the Old Firm. Mm-hmm. And then Rangers win the league. But Mo Kamara joined Celtic in my second season. And I said, I remember talking to him in my first Old Firm game. I said, "Do you remember that time we were walking about the room? Do you know where it's..." Because he couldn't grasp the magnitude of the Old Firm and what it meant to people of Scotland. And then he went, "Yeah, I thought you were crazy, but now I know what you mean."
I understand. Uh-huh. What was the celebrations like after the game?
Oh, it was mental. Everyone went back to Ibrox, and then we went to Mr. Singh's. But there was this one wee bit, right? So we ended up going to Tiger that night. And I was sat on a chair similar to this. It was a big wine-coloured Chesterfield. I was the only sober guy in the place, and I was just trying to absorb everything. And I'm just, this is, I just, I can't, it's difficult to explain the actual feeling of, this is just ridiculous, this is unbelievable. And everybody's drunk, and we're in Tiger. And I remember looking up and I'm saying, "There's Maurice Ross over there, and he had five lassies running him, right? And he's got his strip on. He's got a strip and the shorts and the socks and all that." I'm thinking, good on Mo, he's a man, right? And I remember thinking to myself, he didn't even play, did he?
Giving it the biggest.
So my advice is to any young boy who's won the league is put your strip on, you five lasses, wouldn't you?
Brilliant. Second season at Rangers, final season, strange one.
Yeah.
Third in the league but qualified for the last 16.
Yeah.
What went wrong in the league that year?
Well, I think halfway through it, I think Hearts got after a flyer as well.
George Burley, wasn't it?
Yeah, George got after to a flyer. And I think halfway through it, they were announcing that Alec was going to leave at the end of the season. For me, it never quite, you know. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, Celtic were extremely strong at that time. You know, they're a really strong group of players. Sutton, Hartson, Lennon, Petrov, Thompson, you know, Big Bobo. So they're formidable. So we were up against it, but we never quite. But it's funny, isn't it? You know, because you're trying to gauge at the moment where Celtic are getting to Europa after Christmas, and people are going, "Oh, aye, brilliant." And then you look back to that time, and a team that's third are actually managing to get to the last 16. But Big Boydie, you know, it's one of the... If anybody you want to have a chance for, it's Big Boydie, and he missed it for a couple of yards. Otherwise, we would have been through to the last... last eight.
How much did that hurt you though, that season, finishing third, being a Rangers fan yourself?
I've got to be honest with you, I was just playing a bit part. I was on the bench a lot of that season, because at that time to play at that level, Fernando going out in the middle of the park at that time, so him and Barry had like a lot of legs, so I was kind of just petering down. So, but I was very much of the opinion was, listen, I was actually still enjoying being at Rangers, you know. So it worked out alright in terms of getting another year at the club.
And as you call him, Big Red got the Scotland job now. How good a manager was he?
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. I've been saying for months, and everybody thought I was saying it because I'd worked with him, that I was going to get an automatic shout in for maybe a position or that. But Big Alex had numerous assistant managers over his career as a manager. So, as a man, his man management and his attention to detail when I was a player was very, very good. I used to always watch Big Alec because I was at that stage where I was trying to take things in because I knew I was going to try and go into coaching myself. And he was great. He was a lot more volatile back then. And I fast forward 10 years and I'm working with him in Belgium. And we've got one or two problems with a particular player. And we're standing just like we are the noon as I get five a-sides going on. And anyway, I went to walk on. This player's down tools on the pitch at five a-sides. I went to walk on. The biggie went, oh, where you going? Still on there. And I thought, right, okay. And what he did was, but I didn't know this, we got the interpreter, the Moroccan guy, to interpret, and Big Alex saying, listen, we've came all the way from Scotland, we're away from our families, we respect you and so and so. And then at the very next game, the boy scored two goals and dedicates it to the gaffer. And so what I'm saying is, if I'd have been 10 years earlier, they'd have been grabbing him. I'd have been having to hold him off. So it's a progression of the experience of just man-managing people. And it was brilliant because the attention to detail, three games we used to watch prior to the opposition, and then we'd modify the training round about how we were going to go about getting results. It was really impressive.
So did you see that other side of him at Rangers then? Would he?
Oh no, but
would he have the air dryer out at Rangers?
Well, listen, this is the thing. It was like that, he was a winner and he demanded the best. So when you're young, you think that's the way to go. Even like Peter Reid was a prime example of it. And you have to move now. See if you think about Alex, see if he'd have confronted that guy, because he was one of the French-speaking Belgian guys, and he had about six guys under his wing. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, he ran the dressing room. If we'd have confronted him, we'd have lost six players in that confrontation. And it was a masterstroke. Uh-huh. I mean, is that why he'd go in front of him?
Neither
of them. No, believe me, listen, he was a big old unit, but you just wanted to go and give him a piece of your mind. But it was a brilliant piece of man management, and he does that. And if see the fact that he's got 70% win rate for Scotland, why he was at third or fourth down third down the pecking order is beyond me.
Just back to yourself and Rangers, how do you look back on your spell at the club?
Oh, listen, it was a great time. You know, it would never, whatever I go and do wee bits and bobs for any, even abroad. I went over to a thing called NASA, which is the North American Rangers Supporters Association, just after that. And you're seeing second and third generation guys with men in tears and unbelievable, and they're getting up at 5 a.m. to travel 100 miles to watch games. Mm-hmm. And you actually see the impact to the club. And it's probably the most iconic finish to a season for the Rangers fans. And everybody associates. And it was just great to be part of that.
Would you like to have played for maybe a few younger years at a younger age?
Listen, see, the thing is, I would love to have played them younger. Like the time, as I'm saying to you, when I was at Sunderland, I was flying. Mm-hmm. I feel as if I could have been really decent at the Rangers, but I wouldn't have had the Sunderland experiences, so I don't really regret not getting there at any time. But I'm just grateful that I managed to get back, having got punted as a wee boy. And it's funny because the guy Joe Woods was a big Celtic man. When I went to Bishop Briggs, he took me under his wing, and when I'd won the league at Rangers, I met Joe Woods' wife and as they're up at Bishop Briggs, and she says, "It's Alex, isn't it?" I didn't know the woman. Mm-hmm. I says, "Aye." She went, "I'm Joe Woods's wife." And Joe had passed away I never got the opportunity to say thanks to him for, basically getting my career back on track. And she says, "Oh, I know, he was always praying for you in chapel, son, you were one of his favourites."
Brilliant. After Rangers, up to Dundee, God's country, as player-manager, how did you find that, balancing the two?
No, it was hard. It was very hard. For the first year, because I was commuting from Strathblane, 100 miles there and 100 miles back, so the best part of 1,200 miles just to get to work. Mm-hmm. And then, as I said, I'm 36, 37, and you're trying to play. It was hard.
You had a few offers after Rangers, didn't you?
Well, I got offered to go back down to Millwall. Ray Wilkins was helping me at Millwall at that time. He says to me, "Do you want to come back down to Millwall?" And the thought of going back down to the Den, and I just two young kids, I just thought, no, it's not for me. So it tied in really well because I wanted to get into the coaching side of things. I was in the process of, I'd done my B, my A, and I was in the process of just starting the pro licence. So everything just tied in really nicely, and it was a brilliant club. I had a couple of really good years. Mm-hmm. I think the year before we got there, they were seventh. We managed to get third, second. A slow start in the third season, we got punted. So But no, it was a great experience. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And then obviously last club, St Mirren, for a short spell.
That's interesting. Well, you said to me, was it a nightmare prior to coming on air? And I said, my response was, no, I quite enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. For the first 20 league games, I'd managed to win 9 league games, you know, which when you consider what went on before, you know, drawing with Rangers and drawing with Hibs, and, you know, for a team it was kind of struggling for relegation. And then obviously the start of the next season didn't, you only get 6 games, but there was a lot of stuff behind the scenes with the chairman that I found it really difficult. But listen, I wish them well, and they're doing very well under Jack at the moment.
Is that the frustrating thing about management? People don't see what goes on behind the scenes.
Listen, see, the thing is if I've told people and they're kind of going, some of the stuff, it wasn't an environment I would like to be back in anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And so much so that he said to me after the first or second game of the season, he says they thought they were going to make a change in the summer, but we decided to stick with you. I'm thinking, thanks for the G up, chairman.
Wow.
But so there were things like that going on, and that's like me saying to you as a player, listen, I was going to get rid of you, but I'll just stay, you know.
Head goes.
But that was it. I just knew I was a dead man walking, and I'm thinking to myself, it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. So is that Skinner due with the management, or are you looking to back in?
No, I've had 3 offers to get back in at various levels. One was a scouting job, and I said no, it wasn't practical. I mean, travelling all over England as well, and I thought no. So and then another one was an assistant manager down in the lower leagues of England. But if it's not right, I'm not going back in. Unless you've got the support and the infrastructure's there, I don't need it that much. I love football. I play 5-a-sides with all the McCoist and McAvaney and Mark Walsh and Simon Donnelly. So there's a new sheriff in town, Chris Commons.
Is he ripping it up?
Oh, I said to him a couple of weeks ago, man, I says, I can't believe there's a new sheriff in town.
And I heard you smash Petrov last week as well.
Aye, I did actually, aye. But the thing is, it's like all habits die hard. Yeah. And it was good to see Stan, you know, fighting fit again. Mm-hmm. And he was actually one of the guys when I first joined Rangers. I was sitting in Princess Square having a bowl of pasta. I didn't see him, he was sat around the other side. He came round and he went, hope things go well for you. And I thought, in my mind, it was such a lovely, sporting thing to say to him for Stan. And no, because the thing is, you know, the rivalry with the clubs, it was a lovely thing for him to say. Mm-hmm. So, it was good to get a wee kick out last week.
Right, top man, Alex, thanks very much.
It's good to see you, Sam. Thanks, Paul.